Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
Here we go now.
You are listening to Bump and Stacy. Yes, we're talking about the final two teams in the NFC, but I'll tell you why we're doing it. Because there is a path that the Seahawks can take to get back to a Super Bowl. So which blueprint is the easiest for the Seahawks to replicate? Bump, I got to make it clear right off the top that we're not talking about the Seahawks being anything but themselves. Rather, we're looking at how another team in the NFC went from a wildcard team, which Seattle was, to the number one seed in the NFC this year, that being the Philadelphia Eagles. So really, really fascinating article from The Ringer that I'm going to use to help guide this topic. But I'm going to have you sound off on some of these things and what you think Seattle can do here. Sheil Kapadia begins his article, it's on theringer.com, by talking about how one of the biggest things that the Eagles were able to do, how about have quarterback improvement? Jalen Hurts' completion percentage jumped from 61.3% in 2021 to 66.5% this year. Plus, last year he ranked 21st in completion percentage over expectation. This year, he's second. So it wasn't just having, you know, Jalen Hurts improve. It was having Jalen Hurts take a huge step forward. He's an MVP candidate.
Yeah, usually the biggest jumps happen, typically, not all the time, when your quarterback play takes that giant leap. You're going to have some things happen around him, but when your quarterback play does that, then your team play typically jumps. Now, it could be from a non-playoff team to a playoff team. It could be from a 7 seed to a 1 seed. Mm-hmm. It depends on your situation. But it typically starts and ends with the quarterback. Now, Jalen got some weapons around him as well. And I like what they're doing over there in Philly. During the break, we were talking about these dudes got 70 sacks. That helps the quarterback. What does that do? It gives them shorter field, time of possession, shifts field position. There are things that the defense do that can directly help the quarterback. But if you have a guy making the jump like Jalen Hurts did,
yep,
and protecting the football the way that he did, 22 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, and he ran for 13 touchdowns on his own, chances are you're going to be in the mix for something. It just so happens that these guys are playing for a championship.
All right, something that we know the Seahawks need to do that the Eagles did very successfully. They overinvested, this is what Sheil said, on the offensive and defensive lines. Bump, if you were to describe the two conference championship games, tell me if I'm wrong. The NFC would be a battle in the trenches, and the AFC would be a battle between quarterbacks.
Yeah, you look at the AFC, you mentioned what Joe Burrow lost dang everybody on his offensive
line.
Got a 23-year-old starting over there.
Yep.
They were able to get it done just because of their style of play. They spread the ball open and throw it all across the yard. Same thing with the Chiefs. Not a bad offensive line, but that's not the highlight of their team. If anything, if we're talking about linemen, with the Chiefs, it's a defensive line that are
yeah.
that carry this team over the offensive line. But you go over to the NFC, and you have, like I mentioned, a team that got 70 sacks over there with the Eagles.
70.
And then you go over there with the 49ers, who have the best lineman in the game on their team, who they line up everywhere, at tight end, at fullback, they move them around, and then you throw that defensive line in there as well. So no, I think that accurately describes the two conferences. Over there in the NFC, it's all about nasty, hard-nosed football in the trenches, running the football, taking your shots. Where over there in the AFC, it's okay, spread them up a little bit more finesse. It's still football. Dudes still get hit. They still bang in the trenches. But yeah, I think you're right about that.
Now, I want to spend a second here to talk about investment and what that can look like. I'm not just saying this because, you know, I think it would be cool for the Seahawks to have Geno Smith here on a short-term deal. I'm also saying it because I think that when we think of how the Seahawks can get better, we definitively think like, oh, the only way is to go get the most expensive free agents you possibly can. So I wanted to talk about cap hit for a minute. The Philadelphia Eagles had their main four defensive linemen get double-digit sacks, all of them. Let's talk about what those salary cap hits look like. Now, the main one is obviously going to be Brandon Graham, okay? Like, his cap hit's $9.4 million. That's a big cap hit. That's a notable one. I'm not going to argue against it. Josh Sweat, $3.6 million. Robert Quinn, $684,000, obviously. The Bears are going to have part of that contract. You had some of their backups with, like, under a million cap hit, right? Like the idea that like they Fletcher Cox, $4 million cap hit. Javon Hargrave is their most expensive with 17. I mean, again, you're going to have one or two guys in there that have big cap hits, but like the reason Howie Roseman's probably going to win executive of the year is because he went and added Hassan Reddick and he added guys in free agency, and because they've drafted well and they were able to build up a lot of talent, and not every single piece is taking up this huge chunk of the salary cap. And the only reason I bring that up, Bump, is because I think there's this idea that if you sign Geno, or if you just make a move, that like last year extending DK is somehow going to keep you from contention. Like that the salary cap has to be this pie that you divide 53 ways or whatever. And it doesn't have to be that. In fact, the reason GMs have their jobs is because, for the most part, a guy like John Schneider can be creative and can find really good pieces. They haven't been able to do it successfully with the defensive line, but it doesn't mean they can't, because that's exactly what the Eagles did last year.
No, that's a good point. You have to be able to do a lot with a little. You're going to have your guys who demand a bigger piece of the pie, and they should. The guys who make the plays, the DK going for 1,000 yards, the Genos, we'll see what happens there. Offensive linemen, if you have them. These are the guys. There's about 4 to 5 guys in your team who are just in a different tax bracket. They pull up in a different car than everybody else because they can afford to do it.
Closer to the building.
Yeah, closer to the building. They go on more vacations. They've earned that right. You depend on them more, right? You ask a lot more of these guys. But a lot of the times, it's doing the things that you mentioned. That's why this draft, last year's draft, was so important, because you got production from a lot of guys for cheap.
Yep.
And now you have another opportunity to get production from a lot of guys for cheap. And then you got to find diamonds in the rough when it comes to these free agents. These guys who are on their second contract, maybe didn't play the greatest with their previous team and are looking for a new spot, a guy who fits your personnel, your scheme, and what you want out of them. This is why John Schneider gets paid. This is why Pete Carroll gets paid. Obviously, Pete Carroll gets paid as a coach, but it's to find guys who do not take up a huge piece of the pie, have them buy into what you're doing, and have them execute. And you got to draft well.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm excited, because they put together a draft already. All right. They put together a draft in, when was DK's draft? Was that 2019?
Yeah, I think so.
2019. Another decent draft. You know what I'm saying? This next draft is going to be like the culmination of being patient and waiting around and seeing what happens. So, yeah, everyone doesn't get paid the same.
Yeah.
That's life. That's business. That's football.
And plenty of people texting in. Now talk about Jalen Hurts' cap. LOL. I know he's on a rookie deal. And if the Seahawks find a rookie that they like, that they think can have a great season or can become a great player, then take that guy. Do you want them to take him at number 5? I'm guessing most people immediately thought no, because they know that they need defensive help, specifically defensive line help. I think that, Bump, the clearest path to me looks a little more like Philadelphia than it does San Francisco.
Oh, yeah.
San Francisco was in the basement of the division, the basement of the conference, for like 4 consecutive seasons, able to rack up really good draft picks. Didn't even hit on all of those draft picks, by the way, but they hit on the most important, which was Nick Bosa, in all likelihood this year's defensive player of the year. They were also able to get this like shot in the dark guy to come in as Mr. Irrelevant and help take them to a Super Bowl. But I got to be careful about how I frame that, because I don't think Brock Purdy took them to a Super Bowl. I think that the entirety of this team and Kyle Shanahan's brilliant coaching is the reason that they are competing for a spot in a Super Bowl. Brock Purdy's not making a lot of mistakes, and he's made some key throws, but this is a team that's winning as a whole because they are jam-packed with talent and great game planning. The Eagles are here because they took such monumental steps forward with great roster building and some genuine improvement from guys already on the team. And that, to me, if you're talking about a 1-year improvement, feels a little more achievable for Seattle than losing 4 years in a row and getting 4 years of top 10 picks. I don't know. If you guys want to take that route, you can. It doesn't sound fun to me.
Doesn't sound fun at all. I grew up with a bunch of 49ers fans. They're miserable for a couple of years. You know what I mean? And now they're reaping all the benefits because John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan have done a good job of, one, drafting well, and then identifying other pieces that they feel like are going to work. Like this Brock Purdy pick, let me mention that Brock Purdy beat Jalen Hurts in college. Jalen Hurts, when he was with Oklahoma, I think he threw for like 3 or 4 touchdowns, something like that. Brock threw for like 5. Like, the more I look at Brock and I analyze him, I look at him, I go, it's crazy that he was the last pick in the draft. But they've done a good job of taking advantage of a poor situation. That's just not the Hawks situation right now. They're not in a poor situation. They're not 4-12. They're not they're not picking number five because they're one of the worst teams in the league. They're picking number five because they rolled the dice in a different way. Russell Wilson won it out. They got out and gave him a way out and gave a, and he got a bunch of pieces to go with that. So no, I look at the Eagles and I say that's more likely. And I just look at their personnel in general, right? Say you get a quarterback this draft, later in the draft, you're on some Jalen Hurts type stuff, right?
Yeah.
Get a guy late, let him develop, but see what happens there. Let's not forget he sat behind Carson Wentz for a year or two.
Well, I was going to say, let him develop behind Geno. Like, yeah. That's what I think I'm cool with. If this texter 385, Jalen wasn't good his rookie season, so drafting is still a years-long process to improvement. Yeah, but what if you can be far more competitive next year if you still have Geno?
Yeah, you have to keep Geno. At least this is what I would do. You have to keep Geno. Okay. You draft a quarterback late. You let him sit behind, just like Jalen Hurts did. You already have your A.J. Brown. You already have him. DK Metcalf. You have your big-time receiver. You already have your tight end, your Goddard. So you have two of those things, two or three of those of solid quarterbacks. Now, I think Noah Fant is probably the most talented tight end out of those three. You already have your Miles Sanders. You got a 1,000-yard rusher back there as well. You got 45 sacks this year. No one was within 10 to 12 sacks when it comes to the Philadelphia Eagles. They're at 70. Everyone else is like at 45, 50. Mm-hmm. Are you moving in the right direction? I believe that's good. The Hawks are good enough for seventh in the league when it comes to getting after the quarterback. All right, let's add some pieces there. How do you do that? You can do that in the draft. You can do that with development as well. Can DT come back and put together 10, 11 sacks? Can Achenna come back and put together 10, 11 sacks? Then can you draft a linebacker? So I just look at where the Hawks are, and I'm not going like position for position, tip for tab, but I'm looking at just the formula and how Philly did it, and I go, that's more like the Seahawks. The Seahawks will not go 4-12 next year. They will not be bottom of the league. That's just not what they do, especially with Pete Carroll.
Well, and you think about the type of game Philly runs. It's both teams actually are really good with the run, and one of them has a quarterback that's far more mobile than the other. It still feels like both of these types of teams are ones that a Pete Carroll type team would more look like than would Kansas City or the Bengals. Now, I don't want to count the Bengals out because they had a really good rushing performance against Buffalo.
Yeah.
That's not like what I imagine of as a Pete Carroll team.
No. It's, then you look at the Bengals. I mean, there's so many ways to be successful.
Yeah.
Right. Look at the Bengals, three Pro Bowlers. Right. And they found a way to beat the Chiefs the last, three times that they've played them. You look at the Chiefs, they got like seven Pro Bowlers over there. You draft Pat Mahomes at 10, you already had a quarterback set in place. You look at the 49ers, lost a bunch of games for a few years. And then there's Philadelphia, who kind of hovered around being a decent team. And then boom, you get the right mix and you can take off. So when I just look at it, what everyone else is doing, I look at what the Seahawks are doing, it makes it okay. Because you look at these four different teams playing for a championship this weekend, they all did it in a different way. I'm optimistic, man. They got everything they need on offense right now, except for a lineman or two. But they got everything they need on offense.
I might wrap with this then, Bump. If you're looking at the best path, it doesn't have to be one specific team. If you're looking at the way that you would want to see the Seahawks take the biggest step forward, where does that investment go? Where does the draft pick go? Does it start in the trenches? Does it start outside? Like, where do you see, if you're going to make the biggest leap, that investment taking place?
It's always in the trenches. It's always. I'm a receiver. You can find a good receiver in the draft, late in the draft, too. I mean, we are a dime a dozen. There's a bunch of six-footers walking around town right now who I can make into a decent high school receiver if he let me. That's just how it is. It's hard to find these big old dudes to put their hand in the dirt and get after. That's the hardest human being to find in the NFL to execute at a high level. Receivers, DBs, safeties, linebackers, man, they're everywhere.
Yeah. All right, that was look at these top two NFC teams to figure out which of the two blueprints can quickly lead the Seahawks to contention. Settling on the Eagles, though, look, neither of these are easily done. Okay, the Seahawks have some steps to make this offseason. Lucky for us, that begins so soon. Free agency already right around the corner in March. And of course, you got the draft this spring. Let's jump into headline rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it. headline
rewrites.
We must make headlines.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bump and Stacy.
Headline number one, Geno Smith, Christian McCaffrey, and Saquon Barkley are the three nominees for the NFL's Comeback Player of the Year Award. What's the real headline?
Leading the nominees for the We're Not Mad, Just Disappointed Player of the Year, Russell Wilson. A solid season. He can do... I actually...
Tough looks out there.
Now that Seattle is completely unconnected to what Denver does, I genuinely want Russ to improve. Genuinely, I hope they get Sean Payton there. I hope they find a way to make it work. I would love to see Russell Wilson and Denver take off because it doesn't affect Seattle whatsoever moving forward. And because it's like, it's not that I take joy in anyone's demise. It was just that it was weirdly satisfying to have Denver Broncos fans shame the Seahawks for turning their backs on Russ and then find that they were instead booing Russ out in Denver because he could do nothing.
That was the most satisfying thing.
Yeah. As Denver
those
fans
turncoats out in Denver.
Being holier than thou. Like, I went on a Denver, our sister station, and talked about how Russell Wilson was, like, just really unique. Like, he was a future Hall of Famer, but also, like, wasn't especially personable. And, like, that he had teammates that, like, didn't absolutely love him, but everyone knew he was talented, right? Like, he's just a complex person. Like, he's the most unique person I've ever covered in sports. I wasn't dogging him. I wasn't saying anything bad. I literally said in this interview he was a future Hall of Famer. And they dragged me on that station, played the cuts completely out of context, said that I said he was a bad person in the locker room, which I never said. Like, it was just, it was all wild. But, like, I felt weirdly validated after the fact because I was like, you know what? I told you.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two. Third baseman Scott Rolen, the only person elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame this year, the second straight season. Only one person has received enough votes for election. What's the real headline?
When you ignore an entire generation of baseball players, it just becomes the Hall of Very Good. Bump. This got a lot of fire earlier in the show. What do you think about players being in the Hall if they have tested positive or have been involved in PED scandals?
90% of the majors were doing that. The number eight hitter in the league just couldn't hit the ball. So he didn't get all the attention, man. Barry Bonds was a great baseball player before, after, and during the PED era. That's just what it is, man. I'm okay with it just because the way it was regulated. Like, everybody was doing it. It wasn't a big deal. I love seeing Mark McGwire in a too tight uniform go out there against Sammy Sosa with his guns all out and hit the crap out of a baseball. I loved it. No one was getting in trouble. But now all of a sudden, things change in America. Things change in our culture. And you want to point the finger at everybody. And you point the finger at the guys who are having the most success when there were a lot of sorry baseball players out there doing it who just couldn't get it done the way that they did.
I think that's a really good point because it is really hard, I know, to quantify, like, how good would this player have been without it? With the exception that we know A-Rod was great early in his career. We know that Barry Bonds was still really good. And not only that, but, like, Barry Bonds set a home run record. That's a real home run record. not the AL home run record. You're right. Like, no one else who had the opportunity or probably was using PEDs did that. Like, it's still, even in comparison to people who were still using, did that much better. The history of baseball and the history of most leagues in history in general is always imperfect. And to try to erase a huge part of that and huge stories in baseball because morally we, in hindsight, look down on them eliminates really, really important parts of the story of baseball. Like, you can't tell the story of baseball and not talk about Barry Bonds. Or not talk, for that matter, like, if people want to talk about Pete Rose or A-Rod or these other players that are hated.
And if you flip it, you could probably tell the story of baseball without Scott Rolen.
Hey, no offense to Scott. All love. I'm just saying, like, it feels like moral grandstanding rather than it does actually choosing players that you think are vital to the history of this game and have some of the best performances ever in the history of this game. You can have a little asterisk, right? You can say, like, hey, by the way, Barry Bonds set this record. He was also, you know, everyone assumed, using steroids. Okay, like, we all know that. It's not information we don't have.
Man. Let them in.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number three. NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman says teams in his league don't tank for higher draft picks. What's the real headline?
Don't look now, but the Coyotes and Blackhawks are in the NHL.
Oh.
Yeah, just a fun fact. I'm not sure
news
if people
to Gary.
Are fully... yeah, Gary Bettman. Oh, well, in that case, of course teams tank, Bump. Of course they tank in the NHL, they tank in MLB. They tank all the time because that is one avenue you can take to get better.
Whenever there is draft positioning, there is tanking. That's just how it is in professional sports. Your job is to win, not be mediocre, not barely be good enough to sniff the playoffs and not make it in. So those teams who are close are like, all right, why are we winning again? How is this benefiting our team? Now, they're not going out and telling their guys, hey, man, you got a wide open net. You better miss it. Nah, they're not saying that. They're just putting together lineups that they know aren't going to be able to compete against other teams. That's tanking. I don't think coaches standing up and having a pregame speech saying, you know what, guys, you're going to lose this one for the Gipper. No, they're not saying that. They're just saying, look, we're going to set you guys up for failure. Go out there and play your hardest, but we're trying to get this draft pick.
Coming up at 12:45, Brock Purdy, an Offensive Rookie of the Year candidate. Is it fair, though? Are we haters? Are we haters for having this conversation about whether that's fair?
Yep.
Well, I'll say a little bit, but we're going to lean into it. We are.
Gladly.
That's fine. Gladly. We'll be haters. We're fine with that. That's coming up at 12:45. Is it fair for Brock Purdy to be in that conversation for Offensive Rookie of the Year if he only played 5 regular season games? Before that, though, we're taking a look around the NFL, talking about your MVP candidates, as well as your Coach of the Year candidates, and we'll take a look at some injury updates heading into the championship games. Don't go anywhere.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bump and Stacy,
powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
Bump, we're taking a look around the NFL, so let's head to Kansas City. Quarterback Patrick Mahomes will practice today for the Chiefs. He's been dealing, as you know, with a high ankle sprain. Head coach Andy Reid says his quarterback is still, quote, day-to-day. Is there any doubt in our mind that Mahomes plays? And, importantly, Bump, does a Patrick Mahomes at 50 to 60% give you a better chance than a fully healthy Chad Henne?
I'm not sure about that. We did see Chad Henne drive down the field and put together a 98-yard drive. Here's the thing. This was going to happen. Pat Mahomes is going to go out there, and he's going to give it his all for about a quarter and a half. But eventually, those meds are going to wear off. Those D-tackles, DNs are going to get after him, and he's going to have no choice but to tap out. And Chad Henne, Mr. 7-2, 1985, is going to get in there, and we're going to see what he's made of.
All right, next story here. Bills GM Brandon Bean, whose team recently lost to the Bengals, now going on to face the Chiefs, kept it real when asked about the difference in how the Bills and Bengals rosters were constructed. He said, this is a quote, "They right now are on the advantage of a rookie quarterback contract, and they had some lean years. Without getting too much into their build, I don't want to suck bad enough to have to get Ja'Marr Chase. I would love to have him, but you got to go through some lean years to do that. They were able to get Burrow at 1, and I don't remember where Chase was drafted, but it was pretty high." He's right. It was really high. Now, Bump, Bean's running into the same issues the Seahawks have faced for years. They've never been bad enough to get a top 5 pick. And need I remind you, the Bills haven't even dealt with this for as long as John Schneider in Seattle has, because don't forget that the Bills had the number 9 overall pick in 2019.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm not sure what you're asking me.
I guess what it is there a way to remain really competitive? Because you think of teams that win all the time, and outside of New England being a dynasty, getting to a Super Bowl all the time, the Steelers have had winning seasons every year under Mike Tomlin, but like haven't been to a Super Bowl recently. The last was what? The win over the Cardinals in 2000, I don't know.
So like I see what you're saying. How do you stay
how do you stay
relevant without being bad? How do you stay competitive?
Yeah.
You have to become a destination. You got to become a place that people want to go play for. We see guys seek out the New England Patriots, right? They want that discipline. They want that tradition.
Yeah.
Then also, you got to be able to give away some draft picks so you can move up in the draft. You got to be able to mess with that capital a little bit. So become a destination, mess with your capital, and then hit on some free agents that other people don't really want.
Oh, I'm going to toss in also, like, really capitalize on those trades. Because Christian McCaffrey, the midseason trade the 49ers made, was obviously not for a first-round pick. I mean, they traded a second and some other stuff. At the time, people thought they overpaid. They clearly did not. But they got a player that was perfect for their team and used that player perfectly to their team. They did not trade for Jimmy Graham and not figure out a way to get him as a red zone target, which... yeah, the Seahawks figured it out in the end. He had 10 touchdowns in his final season. I promise, Seahawks, I will stop harping on this issue. I just... very unpopular trades here. All right, let's get to some NFL honors nominees. Now, for all of these players, MVP, comeback player of the year, etc., it's all going to be announced, obviously, in the week in between the championship games and Super Bowl, because you're going to have 2 weeks to get ready for the Super Bowl. So we are 2 weeks away from these winners. Let's go AP comeback player of the year. You've got Saquon Barkley, Christian McCaffrey, Geno Smith. You've got a coach of the year, assistant coach of the year. Let's see. I'm trying to figure out what's going to get bumped the most fired up. I have to hold off on offensive rookie of the year because that's the conversation we're going to have. Let's start with comeback player. Does Geno deserve it over Saquon Barkley and Christian McCaffrey? I think Saquon might, no pun intended, run away with this one.
I think that he deserves to be in the conversation, but Saquon Barkley probably should get this thing.
Yeah.
Geno is a comeback player of the year. He's coming back from the league, like throwing him away and saying, you're no good enough to be a starter. You're going to be a backup. Good story. I would understand if Geno won, but you look at Saquon Barkley and all the injuries that he had to overcome. His rookie year was amazing. Then he stumbles a little bit, and the year that he had this year was undeniable. So I think Saquon deserves it, but Geno definitely should be in the conversation.
Hear me out on this theory. As you guys know, we mentioned it in Four Down Territory, MVP nominees are Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, Jalen Hurts, Justin Jefferson, and Patrick Mahomes, with Jefferson being the only non-quarterback in there, and Mahomes is the odds-on favorite to win. Offensive player of the year, I think, goes to the player they wanted to give MVP to but couldn't because of Patrick Mahomes. Nominees, Jalen Hurts, Justin Jefferson, Tyreek Hill, and Patrick Mahomes also nominated in here.
Oh, man, if Justin Jefferson gets this award, I will be unbearable for a full segment, Stacey.
Yes, a full absolutely. Segment. I mean, go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, he probably won't get it again because you lean towards the quarterback when it comes to offensive production and stuff, as you should. They get paid the most money. They touch the football every down. They make the most decisions. I get all that. But why not throw like a wrench in the matrix, you know what I'm saying, in this world we live in, and give Justin Jefferson that thing?
Looking up Justin Jefferson's final stats for 2022, because I'm thinking of Derrick Henry. I know he had over 2,000 when he obviously did not get MVP, because it's been years and years and years since that's gone to a running back. Let's see, since 2005, was it Sean Alexander? Either way, I always think, like, what would a wide receiver, what would a running back have to do? So total yards from scrimmage for 2022 for Justin Jefferson, over 1,800 total yards from scrimmage. And he had 8 touchdowns, which doesn't sound like a lot, but it doesn't matter because he had 128 receptions and was the biggest reason that team was in the playoffs. I wonder what number it has to be. No, I don't. I don't. And I hate that. It's going to be Patrick Mahomes. Offensive player is probably going to go to, like, I could see it going to potentially Tyreek Hill. No, I think it's going to go to Jalen Hurts. I think they're going to want to give... Yep. They're going to be like, we can't not give Jalen something, so we're going to give him offensive player.
Yep.
We're going to give Patrick Mahomes MVP. I just wonder what number has to be surpassed by either a wide receiver or a running back to ever get MVP.
I think if a receiver goes over 2,000 yards and like 15 touchdowns, you have to give it to him.
You have to.
Because that's probably just under half of the yards that his quarterback threw for. Because the elite quarterbacks throw for over 4,000 yards, like 4,200 yards a year.
Yeah.
You get a receiver over 2,015, I think you got to give it to him.
All right, let's go to Defensive Player of the Year. You and I are probably both going to be in the same mind of this one. Nick Bosa of the 49ers, obviously. Chris Jones, Chiefs defensive tackle. Micah Parsons, all three players, the best part of their team's defense. I think Chris Jones, I don't think he'll win. I think it'll be Bosa. Chris Jones is the most overlooked player of the three.
Definitely is. I think Micah Parsons, for me, had the play of the year last week against the 49ers when he picked up a grown offensive lineman and threw him to the ground with his Reggie White impression. Bam, lifted him off his feet. He's undersized. Like, the things that he's doing, I don't think people realize that he's undersized for his position. He's just that good. But it's all about sacks, getting after that quarterback, and Nick Bosa does it with high efficiency.
Now, there may be more coaching positions opening up once the season ends. For right now, though, there are already quite a few. Indianapolis Colts, Carolina Panthers, two of those teams. Jeff Saturday, Bump, just completed his second interview for the head coaching job for the Indianapolis Colts. Now, Rams defensive coordinator Raheem Morris, who's done an amazing job, will also have a second interview for the Colts head coaching job. That'll come later this week, according to Ian Rappaport. Is there a world where you could actually see Jeff Saturday returning as head coach rather than interim head coach, being full-on head coach of the Indianapolis Colts?
Yeah, there's a world. It's called America. It's called going to the country club and drinking beer with your boys. Right. It's called poker and cigars. You know, it's called family trips. It's called relationships. That's how you get ahead in a lot of cases in this world. And Jeff Saturday is a prime example of that.
All right, let me end on this one. Two names we're plenty familiar with here in Seattle. One, a former defensive coordinator. One, a current assistant head coach and defensive member of the defensive coaching staff. Curious to know what you think about the potential departure bump of Sean Desai. Sean Desai, who's the associate head coach here in Seattle, a big part of the secondary coaching staff, will interview for the Dolphins' defensive coordinator job today. That from Ian Rappaport. What does it mean for Seattle? Oh, Chris Richard is also interviewing, is the other former Seahawk I mentioned. But how much would it potentially affect Seattle for Sean Desai to come? And I guess what I'm really asking is, what kind of hand did Sean Desai have in what I thought was a much improved passing defense this year?
Now, this is what guys do when they come to Seattle. Pete Carroll does a great job of elevating guys. He doesn't want to keep you forever. He understands how this league works. And Desai was a great part in the secondary, him and Carl Scott. If there were no Carl Scott, I'd be a lot more concerned if Desai were to leave. But I think Carl Scott has been sitting at the table with these guys, putting his ideas out there and doing his thing. But two things before we go. One, I didn't mean to throw you under the bus with your first question.
Oh, you did not.
And then two, Purdy actually lost to Hurts by a point. I thought he won that game. So self-correction here.
How many of us are watching? What was he, Iowa State?
Yeah.
Right? There's so many.
Go Cyclones.
Look, here's the thing. There's so many states in general to keep track of. Much less multiple schools in those states. There's 50
of them.
Not
every school, though, has like a state. There's no Wyoming state.
How do you know that?
I know that. It's a fact.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Are you positive?
1,000,000% positive.
Well, guess what I'm Googling during the commercial
break. Good luck. There's only one four-year school in the state of Wyoming. It's University of Wyoming.
I beg to differ.
Okay, you can do that, but you're going to be proven wrong.
Curtis, would you say that Bump and I are haters?
Oh, at all times. It's great. That's what I love about you guys.
Thank you so much. We're going to go ahead and continue that trend because the Associated Press announced their nominees for Offensive Rookie of the Year. And guys, not only do we have an issue with it, we're just going to be straight up haters. And I'm fine with it. We'll tell you why next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bump and Stacy,
powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
Guys, make sure you are subscribed to the Bump and Stacy podcast, the podcasted version of our show. So if you miss any part of it, like fun interviews, maybe the one we have coming up here at 1 with Jeffrey Chedia of NFL Network and NFL.com, then you can always go back and listen to it because he's going to help with a preview of the championship games this weekend. Before we get to it, though, look, I'm not proud of what we're about to do.
I am.
What we're about to do is hate on a young, like 23-ish-year-old man, but for good reason. Offensive Rookie of the Year candidates have been released along with the rest of the NFL honors. Offensive Rookie of the Year candidates, there are three of them. Starts with Ken Walker here in Seattle, over 1,000 yards as a rookie running back, leading rusher on this team. Then you have Garrett Wilson, leading receiver on a Jets offense that had three different starting quarterbacks at one point. And third, quarterback Brock Purdy, who appeared in five games. Now, I don't mean to take away from Brock Purdy. What he's doing is very cool. Arguably one of the coolest stories. He's balling out. One of the coolest stories in the NFL. If there's a random 49ers fan that is listening for some reason, A, I don't care if you hate me, but B, you have no reason to because I'm giving Brock Purdy credit. But five games? Tell me this isn't just like a recency bias. He's a quarterback. How cool is this kind of thing? Because Brock Purdy is not the reason the 49ers are in the conference championship.
Brock Purdy. Heck of a year, man.
Yeah.
67% completion rate, 1,300 yards, 13 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. The dude is balling. He's poised in the pocket. You see him go through his checks. He's good. He gets outside the pocket, throws the football away. Shanahan says he's done a remarkable job protecting the football. My man's has done it 5-6 games, Stacey. 5-6 games. It's offensive rookie player of the year. Not of about a month and a half. Not about a little over a month. You know what I'm saying? Like, you got guys like Garrett Wilson out there doing it with 10 different quarterbacks, it seems like. You got Ken Walker out there doing it and struggling at times and then still finding a way to do it. I understand the allure of Brock Purdy. The story is great. Mm-hmm. Iowa State, Mr. Irrelevant. This team is in the conference championship.
Sure.
That's what I think has influenced this as well. They're not looking at the regular season. They're looking at the postseason, too. Like, oh, man. Took down the Seahawks at home. Took down the Cowboys. You're in the conference championship. This kid is good. You know what? He is good. And he should be the quarterback next year for the 49ers. But it's offensive rookie of the year. Not about a month.
And it would only happen, A, to a quarterback, and B, specifically to a quarterback who's captured this kind of attention with a team that is so stinking good. Imagine, now he wasn't a rookie, but imagine if Rashad Penny, who was the best running back in football in December last year, was an offensive player of the year candidate. Or
right?
Like one offensive player of the year. That would never, ever happen. That's essentially what Brock Purdy's doing. Like, he is playing great football. He's not throwing for like 450 yards a game. Or multiple touchdowns.
He's efficient, though.
He's efficient. He's
no games over 300 yet.
The thing is, I don't mean to take away from Brock Purdy's really remarkable stretch of games here and story. But I think he is only being included here because of that story, because of his draft positioning being the final pick of the draft, which is what makes it a cool story, and because he's a quarterback. This would never happen with any other position in football. No other player would come on for the final month of a season, take off, and suddenly be a favorite for rookie of the year, offensive rookie of the year, what have you. It's specifically because of this. And for that matter, like, what he's been able to do is really impressive, but he is not the biggest contributor and most talented player on a very talented San Francisco 49ers team. Whereas, I know I'm not looking at Ken Walker here, but you look at Garrett Wilson with the Jets. Garrett Wilson finished with a little over 1,000 yards, 1,103 yards, which aren't like eye-popping numbers, but still really, really impressive. He had 83 receptions, 1,100 yards, and 4 touchdowns. Again, the reason that's especially impressive is Garrett Wilson was by far the best part of that offense.
He did it with the most unstable quarterback position in the NFL.
Unstable quarterback position. You had 3 different starting quarterbacks. Not counting when Streepler came in for a game. You had 3 different starting quarterbacks for the Jets. Not one starting quarterback for the Jets surpassed 2,000 passing yards in a season. Garrett Wilson finished with 1,100 yards, which is more yards than Joe Flacco, who started 4 different games, and slightly fewer yards than Mike White, who started 4 games.
Like, it's how impressive,
that's how impressive
that was. It's so impressive that I understand if Ken Walker don't get it. You know what
sure.
I mean? Usually I'm biased. I try to stay with the hometown team. But I'm like, no, what that young bit did over there. Because people don't understand the chemistry between a receiver and a quarterback.
Yep.
Right? I have to learn the quarterback. I got to understand. And people take this for granted. Like the trajectory of the football. Where he likes to throw it. You know, we're watching film together. What he likes. He has to understand what I like. And for him to not skip a beat has been extremely impressive. But this Brock Purdy stuff, man, and young man, I'm sorry that I'm hating on you, but I wouldn't be myself if I didn't keep it 100.
Gotta
right
do
now
it.
Man,
gotta do you, it.
It's a great
it
story.
It
if
parents...
it isn't the most diabolical haters this side of the Mississippi,
it is what it is.
Your parents should be proud of you. You should be proud. The organization found themselves a quarterback, but man, I got to see more of it for the year. There are other rookies who've been grinding all year, who've been suffering, who've been banged up, who's won, who's lost, who's been critiqued publicly.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a nice little run, and they're going to put you in the mix. If he wins this award, my goodness gracious, Stacey, if he wins this award, I don't want to see you wear any red for a week. I don't want to mention the bing, bing, bangs. If he wins this
bing,
award,
bang, Niner gang.
I am going to lose myself. There's only a couple things that get me going, and this is one of them, man, because I know how hard it is to be successful in this league and to be healthy throughout the course of this league. Ask the 49ers, lost 2 quarterbacks in
yeah.
this league. You know, to be healthy and to perform is tough to do, especially for a rookie who's used to being done after week 12. Come on, man.
Recency bias.
Yeah.
Recency bias. No way any other position gets this kind of nomination, and there's no way this happens even if it happens for the first 5 games, right? If the
right.
roles reverse. But hey, it is what it is. I still think Garrett Wilson's going to get this one. At least in this case, I hope he or Ken Walker go away with this nomination, or excuse me, the win here. And again, congratulations to Brock Purdy. I just think these other two guys deserve it way more. All right. Jeffrey Chedia is going to join us next for a preview of the championship round, going X's nose with four down territory at 1:15. What I need to know still coming your way. Don't go anywhere.